Hi, welcome to the Soaked by Slush podcast. My name is Isaac Rautio, and next to me is William von der Palen. We are the guys from FutureCast. We were asked to do the first ever Soaked by Slush podcast. And you might be wondering, what is Soaked by Slush? It's a new startup media by Slush. It's always free, never boring, surprising at times. All about hyper-concrete stories on building companies, fresh takes on European tech, and data-driven observations about the world around us. So this podcast is all that and more. All the guests that we have are speakers and guests from Slush, world-class guests for a reason. And so you're going to be wanting to hear these episodes, even the ones you aren't initially interested in. Go outside of your comfort zone and check them out, because every single one of these were interesting for us. So without any further ado, hope you enjoy the episodes. Thank you. Hi, welcome to the Soaked by Slush podcast, the first podcast of the day, day two at Slush this year, Friday. I don't remember what date it is anymore. We've been working all week, so I don't know what date it is anymore, but it doesn't matter. Hey, William.
Hi.
So, who's our guest this time?
We have Kaisa Salakka from Unity 3D. Welcome. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. Great Very to nice. Be here.
So, we always ask this, the first question. Who are you and what do you do?
I'm Kaisa Salakka, as mentioned. Yes. I work for Unity here in Helsinki as a product director. So I've been for 4 years in the company doing machine learning throughout my career.
Okay. We also had a machine learning episode last night, so we might be a little better equipped today than yesterday to talk about this. But so what is Unity?
So Unity is the world's largest 3D content creation platform. So we power most of the video games industry, so enable game developers to build their games. But it's also other experiences with 3D than games. So it might be architecture, film, media, etc. But it's especially games and for example, mobile game developers, players as well. They should be quite well familiar with Unity.
What are some, maybe, we're not gamers per se, we don't use a lot of these games. What are some really famous examples of games that use your engine?
Maybe the most famous at the moment is Pokemon Go. That's
really
one of one of the examples that is public for us, but there is a wide variety of those. More than 50% of the mobile games at the moment are made with Unity.
What's actually going on with Pokemon Go right now? Like, I remember it. I actually had it for a few months back in the day. But what's going on with it right now? Is it still going strong?
I think it found its like hardcore fans.
Yeah.
And those people continue playing it. So they keep like updating the service. And it has its fan base, and that's about it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Why do you think you have such a big market share? What is it about your engine that, you know, why did you become so popular?
Basically, 10 years ago still, most of the game developers, they just simply built their own 3D platforms and physics engines to be able to create games, which actually doesn't make that much sense, because you can't like focus on the content creation if you have to like solve all the hard problems for like how to get the 3D experience done. So that's why the engine started to, few of the companies started focusing on engines. We first supported especially the simpler use cases, why we started to grow so fast in mobile game space. And we basically made it easy for pretty much anyone to start building games. So, and that has been the like mission for us, to democratize the game development.
Really? So like anyone, some guy in a garage could basically get this platform, and then if he's good enough, theoretically he could make his own game.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of those cases. Actually, it's one of the best things in working for Unity, is that like when you travel around the world, every now and then you get to meet people who actually started crafting something. They didn't knew anything about gaming. Probably they have been gamers, but like don't know anything about how to make business out of it. And then by using our tools, they were able to build a business around.
But you still need to be able to code, right? It's not that automated that you just, you know,
drag and drop.
Yeah, drag and drop website building.
Not yet, but like we are focusing on that part as well. So in the future, we see designers especially, they should be able to build games also without like advanced coding skills.
Awesome. So what is the state of gaming like these days? Like, as a, I'm not exactly like a boomer, like non-gamer type of, like, I have played it back in the days and everything, but like I'm not very like on the loop, as they say. Like, what's the state of gaming like? Esports is huge. That
yeah.
I know.
Yeah, that has been definitely growing during the past years. There is audiences for different types of gaming. So there is like heavy boom in around like mobile gaming. So that's one aspect. Like, that's where I most of my experience is on. Esports, one of the growing parts. And now like the latest news around like how streaming is expected to be something new and interesting for games. Most probably it will bring like these audiences closer together. So basically you should be in the future able to play multiplayer games, for example, through multiple different platforms and by streaming it.
Do you see sort of gaming becoming this? I don't know if you can compare it to music, but I feel like when I look back in the days of music, there were a few big bands and there were a few big artists that everyone sort of liked. But then these days, during the times of Spotify and just like making music has become so much easier. You basically just need a laptop and or one instrument or just a basic recorder. You can make a pretty decent song, and you can make a decent song, make a career out of it, basically. Do you see the same happening in gaming, whereas there aren't these sort of singular concentrated games that people sort of gravitate towards, and just becomes this more sparse and sparse field of many different types of games made by sort of more independent producers?
Yeah, and that has been definitely happening during the times when like mobile games started to grow. So still 5 years ago, there was actually these completely new companies booming, like huge success stories coming from like small teams. It's becoming harder, and like I'm slightly worried about that trend. Basically, it's really difficult to get like new mobile games out there because it's simply super expensive to acquire new users. So it's kind of slightly against our philosophy of democratizing the game development. We hope that there is like also in the future there is possibility for pretty much anyone to build these experiences. But like we see companies consolidating. The biggest ones who have the money and power to publish games at the moment, they acquire the smaller ones from the market.
Yeah, that is the problem with any type of democracy. Like, even though that is the best system we have for many different things, but the bad part about it is, like, not everyone should be as out there as every. There are some people who deserve to be out there more because of their skills and talents. And
exactly.
Recently, both Apple and Google have launched these kind of game streaming initiatives. Do you have more insight into this? Do you think this is somewhere the market will go in the future, or is it just something, you know, the big companies trying to poach a bit on, you know, everything they can get their hands on?
We are, of course, very closely following what is happening there. We are also one of the major partners with them. Future will show. I have my guesses, but like the answers are not yet there. For example, with Google, we don't even know the business model yet properly. So difficult to say yet. But I do expect it to, like, if there becomes more users to that space, it will definitely change the landscape in the business.
Yeah, and it kind of seems intuitive that it would, because, you know, the same thing happened to music and happened to video streaming, so why not, you know? The business model is so familiar for people, and people want to try things and not necessarily own things anymore. So,
well, the difference is that in gaming, the free-to-play economy is huge at the moment. So then it's the question of like, and the balance in between. Like with free-to-play, you basically pay with your data and like through advertising, and then IAPs. And at the same time, there is the boom around data privacy. So you want to limit the usage of data. And it's basically up to the players to decide which one they prefer. Do they want to actually pay for the services or continue giving out their data and power the industry to other like monetization mechanisms?
We're talking about, yesterday we were talking to the CEO of Masterclass, and we were talking about education, online education in general, and how sort of, when you have these sort of online courses or online education, you're not competing with contemporary education, you're competing with Netflix, you're competing with YouTube, you're competing with social media and everything, and you sort of have to make learning fun, to make it interesting, and learn. Yeah. And in the future, learning is going to be necessary to sort of, you have to revamp your skills in a ever-changing world, an ever sort of modifying world. I mean, have you seen this trend being in this field where more people are utilizing maybe even your platform for like more educational purposes?
Yeah, we are supporting on that field as well. So many of the educational games, they are made with Unity and also other similar apps. Made with Unity, yes, and then we, at the same time, we are of course focusing on education by ourselves as well, so making it as easy to like get on board with Unity and start building your own experiences, basically utilizing the engine to create new content and even build a business around that. So, yes.
I have this, okay, so this is a little crazy, but so talk about esports.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's CS:GO, you have League of Legends, you have Dota, you have games like this, and but with VR and stuff like this, I have this fantasy of the future of e-gaming is going to be like Call of Duty with like real life sort of Navy SEALs competing in this VR world against each other, and then just millions of people watching this, and like esports people being like real athletes in a way. Do you see, like, what are some of the future, I guess this is just my little stupid kid's fantasy, but like what are some of the like What are the next steps when it comes to gaming and I mean VR and AR and stuff like this? Like, what some concrete steps that you see that are being taken?
I personally actually believe into AR even more than VR.
Yeah.
VR, I expect it to have a smaller user base than what AR will be. Like, I expect AR to actually become something that everyone will use. And basically, what it will do is to mix virtual reality or virtual reality with the physical world.
Yeah.
And then things will become interesting. I also expect kind of the gaming environment to get more mixed with other industries and the physical world as well. So it's not going to be that specifically like, okay, this is gaming and this is gamers, as it has been so far. Like, most of us will become gamers in the future. That's how I see it.
Yeah. Okay, that's an interesting phrase, an interesting statement. Maybe, I mean, and AR sort of gives me more comfort even, because VR seems like this, like my dark fantasies about VR is like you escaping from reality and just like basically living in this, I guess in a sense, I mean, it's a very deep philosophical question if you want to call it a fake world versus this quote unquote real world, but I mean, that's a different discussion. But yeah, AR seems very, I mean, Pokemon Go, there's one example.
Yeah.
Yeah, one thing that's often criticized when looking at the gaming industry is the fact that, you know, games and the impact they have on the world is, in the end, in many cases, can be relatively small, and yet you have a lot of capital going into it, and especially some of the brightest minds doing it. And how do you see this phenomenon? Because, you know, I think Elon Musk or someone said that, you know, if you had these people work on some of the biggest problems in the world, the world would probably be a better place already.
So first of all, if I start from Finland, how I ended up into working in gaming and this sector, like, I have been doing like machine learning throughout my career, 15 years, and like looking at like where the interesting machine learning problems lie today, it was obvious that it was gaming. Basically, there is much more data and it's evolving much faster than other industries 5 years ago when I entered gaming myself. So it was quite easy choice back then. Also, like, from the Finnish point of view, if I look at the Unity, we have 150 employees here working with basically machine learning problems, scaling up the system that serves like 1.7 billion mobile devices today. There's you can't reach that kind of a scale anywhere else. And I'm super proud of the fact that we can actually offer that experience to 150 people in Finland. So basically, when those people one day leave from Unity, they can take like that experience with them and utilize the skills in other industries as well. So that's kind of one point of view for it, like how to, at massive scale, solve machine learning problems. We have a good environment for that. Then, secondly, as I mentioned, how I see world when going forward is like these things will mix together more. You mentioned the educational side and how gaming has an impact there. Then like how virtual world will mix together with physical world. The 3D engine that is needed to power all of this. Most of the future jobs that are interesting for me, they are somehow like involved with this. And then thirdly, the mission of the democratizing game development. I just like the fact that we can offer that opportunity for people to start working on this industry.
Yeah, and you said this platform is used for other things than gaming too. Like, and was it purposeful, or was it just like people realizing that okay, so we can actually like look at this platform, like they make games on it, but we can actually sort of create a building, make an architectural model. Like, was it something you intended from the beginning, or just something that people realized?
It happened first.
It happened.
Yeah, and then we have been starting to focus on certain industries. But for example, even though we don't specifically focus on industrial engineering and design, there is a lot of uses in that space, for example, today. Something we have been purposely focusing on lately is helping companies that build autonomous vehicles, self-driving cars. In that space, you can actually create 3D world and let the algorithms to learn to drive there rather than like driving all those thousands and millions of kilometers to train the algorithms in the real world. So basically what the car manufacturers now do is that they first train the algos in the world built with Unity, and only after that they let start training them outside.
Just as long as they don't use the GTA world, because that's crazy. No one should drive in the real world.
Yeah. Going back still to the smart people working in gaming problem, I think it's an interesting view to maybe see the whole industry as kind of an incubator for future good things that are going to happen. But I do think it's partly a problem also, you know, of course, people are also motivated by where the money is and where you can make exits and where you get funding. So do you think it's partly a problem also that we are not funding, you know, the big problems and the research into big problems or the solutions of problems like refugee crises or climate change and the businesses in that enough? Or it's maybe not acceptable to make money out of these ideas and people like just follow the cash flow and go do something where it's high pace, where you can learn a lot, as you said, and just, you know, stay there because it's good.
If I take an example, which is maybe more realistic, like more today, healthcare. What is the difference in between healthcare today and gaming is the speed of change in this industry. So like when you have industries which are like hugely regulated and limited and there's like this slowness in the industry itself, it's a more difficult thing to actually make a change in those industries. And like what I specifically like about gaming is the customers we have, the ability to like develop products together with the customers who are like super interested to work together with us, and they are continuously providing feedback for us and willing to develop new products and features. You don't get that from many industries, and once you get used to it, it would be like difficult to enter other industries where it's not working like that.
When you came in, I couldn't help but notice you're wearing a t-shirt that says, "Girls can do anything." And What's the state of women in the STEM fields now? Because I'm neither a girl nor in the STEM fields, so I have no sort of personal experience or insight into this. So you're no way old, but you've been in the field for a while, I guess. So have you seen it sort of advance in a way, in a direction? How do you see it now, and how did you see it before when you sort of started studying and got into it?
Yeah. First of all, the T-shirt goes to my own girl, so
yeah.
That's the main reason for it. Like, I want to make sure that the world is more equal once she enters the job market and starts her studies, etc. For me, I'm kind of lucky. It hasn't been a problem, but like, it's not the case for everyone. Unity especially has been focusing a lot on equality and making sure that we are like more balanced with that than what we typically see, especially in gaming. So things we have been doing lately is for example, like when we interview people, we make sure that we have like candidates from both genders, for example, and like also with wide variety of different backgrounds, and it actually it helps. So we have been seeing the change like during the past 2 years when we hope this has been a focus area for us. Surprisingly big like theme that should be discussed in Finland, especially, like even though people always say that like equality in Finland is like we are really advanced in this, and women have been able to vote for like close to 100 years, etc. But I don't see that in the workplaces, unfortunately, yet. And what I'm worried about is that the topic is not talked about here. So I'm happy to see the progress that, for example, Schloss has been doing around the theme during this year.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy when you look back, like, or when you actually think about this. Like, this is sort of the ongoing historical process that started like in the 60s, just the 60s, when women started entering the workforce sort of in like mass numbers, and when people talk about sort of structural hinders for women entering the workforce, I've been worrying about wondering about that term for a while. Like, what does it actually mean? And we're doing a podcast outside of this too, when we had this guest talking about this, and I asked her this question, like, because it seems to me the world structural, what I think about is and why I wonder about it, because there are no laws that say like there should be women can't enter this field, or like there should be this amount of men and stuff like this. Isn't the problem exactly that it's not in the lines, it's between the lines? Between the lines is where this sort of discrimination is happening, and where this sort of separation is happening. And there's no sort of, one other thing that was mentioned is there's no support network. You only have a few of these, maybe. You have Linda Liukas in Finland, who is a big, big sort of idol for a lot of people. But that's not enough. If you don't have friends, if you don't have family or people close to you who are giving you the sort of everyday support for your endeavors, that's what really will sort of bring you
and
down.
And it kind of starts with the small girls. They don't have that kind of a model anywhere in Finland, for example. So it actually starts from kindergarten already, when they start to be like separated, which is not good, of course.
No, that's true. It seems like this is one of the big debates that have succeeded with actually now being in the limelight for quite a long time, which is positive. That and maybe climate change are the like structural problems that we are actually talking about on a daily basis, which is of course the foundation start for actually solving it. And it seems also like a thing that once it gets going, and once there's a few more generations also, like when we pump more, you know, the more women enter technology and do it, it's the more normalized it's also going to be. Or like, and people who will grow up will never know, you know, that there was a time where it was. And that gives some kind of comfort as well.
And what I'm especially worried about that is that, like, in Finland, the attitude is that, like, there is nothing we can do to change it, because, like, there is not enough women who has this, like, educational background, or we don't have these candidates anywhere. If that's the attitude, like, you can never actually change it, because, like, you can find the candidates if you start looking for them. And I believe the change comes through that. And then once you have the the people in those positions, then they can like work as role models for the future.
Exactly.
Talent.
Yeah, it absolutely needs to be deliberate, I think, and it needs to be pushed. Even, you know, the more it's pushed now, the faster, you know, the market will be better and there will be more equality. So, yeah.
But at the same time, I don't like want there to be limits so that like you need to have like X percent this gender, etc. Because that would like create negative loop around.
Yeah. Well, it should be about talent, regardless
exactly.
of, you know, yeah. anything. Should
always
just
the
be
best
about talent.
Talent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And there's also this. Tell me if you agree, because this is also another thing that we heard in that podcast, or I heard because William couldn't come. But is that there's this misconception about the STEM fields that you have to be this genius to enter them. Like you have to be this, because all the sort of rock star people in the STEM field, coders and mathematicians and scientists, are these sort of, there's this image of these, like this one person who revolutionized everything, which is absolutely true. But like the people working in these fields are normal, completely
exactly,
normal people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not like, it's not theoretically any harder than anything else. It just depends on your field of interest, basically. And
yeah.
what you, if you like numbers, might be the right thing for you.
Yeah. And it's actually, like if we think about it, now we all talk about continuous learning and how important it is, like how the industries and markets and requirements continuously change. Like there's no way around it that you need to continuously learn. Which also means that you don't have to be kind of ready for the role when you enter it.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, and people who have been ready for 20 years might not be ready if they stay complacent. Like
exactly.
they might be gone
yeah.
in a few years if they... Yeah, that's right. It's a very interesting field, which I don't understand nothing about, but it's very interesting to hear about
yeah,
these things. Yeah,
exactly.
And it's good to hear that it's going in a good direction. Awesome.
Important last question, though. What games do you play yourself?
Yes.
Unfortunately, it's a job for me nowadays. So, like, the best times to play are when I play together with my kids and family. I think, like, a reason the best game experiences have been so that, like, I have been in San Francisco working and my kids are home and we play Brawl Stars together. Like, we actually enter the same match together and then we communicate in the chat and often we might have a call ongoing at the same time and then we play as a team. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's one of the most beautiful sides about gaming, how social it actually
exactly.
can be. It's not isolating.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
not as isolating as people think.
I think, Isak, I'm going to challenge you to a game of Doodle Jump after this, this podcast.
Bring
it on.
You're going yeah. down, William.
But hey, thanks so much for joining. This has been insightful and very interesting. So great.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
Have a nice slush.
Thanks. You too.
You too.